welcome to the second hour today of this two-hour special broadcast on Sunday Salon, dealing with the Pacifica crisis. Both Sherry Gendelman and Nicole Sawaya, who are here, have been frantically trying to calm me down, but I'm beyond calm on this issue. I have seen and heard too much over the past 2.5 years, but especially over the past 2.5 weeks, to have any kind of equanimity on this issue. I will admit it. And I also will... Hang on, what's in your mic?
The situation, this is what we've come to, folks. I look calm next to Larry. I'm really in bad shape.
And that's
Nicole,
a first.
And Nicole looks calm.
I look like I'm sleeping next to Larry. Are you kidding?
This is bad, folks. This is as bad as it gets around this place. I've been around 32 years now or something, and I don't see us surviving this board of directors much longer. They got to get out. By the way, there are many programs that I would rather be doing that I could approach with a greater sense of controlled outrage rather than off-the-top steam coming out of my head. One of them we did last week, and I want to remind people that today there is an emergency town hall teach-in about public power, people demanding no bailout and dealing with why is there a utility meltdown. And that's going on this afternoon from 3 to 6 at the Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarians, Cedar and Bonita. There are many elected officials who are going to be there, and I hope you will take the opportunity perhaps to lobby them about the KPFA and Pacifica situation and get them active if they aren't already. Council Member Chris Worthington, Supervisor Keith Carson, Angela Alioto may be there, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, Congressman George Miller, I don't know how many of them, Assemblywoman Dionne Arriner, and plenty of other people who know about the public power situation and the utility meltdown. Once again, that's going on today from 3 to 6 at the Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarian Universalists, Cedar at Bonita in Berkeley. Joining us now from back east by telephone are two people who are involved or have been involved in the situation at WBAI, which we talked about tangentially last hour with Leslie Kagan. First, we have Professor Gerald Horn, who is a professor at the University of North Carolina, but also at UC Santa Barbara. How do you manage to do that, Jerry? Teach at both places.
Well, I'm on the faculty at UNC, and I just visit from time to time at the University of California.
Okay, thank you. People with long political memories may remember Jerry Horn on the ballot, where he got a lot of votes. What year was that?
In 1992, I ran against Dianne Feinstein on the Peace and Freedom Party ticket and accumulated 305,000 votes.
Which was a very good showing, slightly exceeded this time by Medea Benjamin running on the Green Party, but still, Jerry Horn was in there raising the issues at that time. Before that, however, when I first met you, you were involved with WBAI. Talk a little about when and what that was.
Well, I've been involved in WBAI for years, years and years, more than I care to recall. I was once chair of the board at WBAI. I hosted programs there over the years, and in fact, in the last few months of last year, I was periodically hosting a program on Drive Time on WBAI in New York City.
When was that?
November.
Of this past year?
Of this past year, yeah.
So you are pretty familiar with the situation there, I should say, and as a board member and as a programmer. Also joining us on the air right now is Sharon Harper, who up until the Christmas coup was one of the producers of The Morning Show, which had Bernard White and Amy Goodman as its co-hosts. Welcome to KPFA, Sharon Harper.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, the reason why I wanted to get both of you, and both of you are African Americans, on the program right now is something that we were talking about last hour, which is the strategy that's been used since Mary Frances Berry got into power, but really in some ways before that, to divide this organization on racial lines, and especially on the national board level, to bring people on the national board who agree with Mary Frances Berry's agenda, whatever that turns out to be, who are African Americans, and to put dissidents on the board who are white folks, and then to have, as has been said, fingers pointed, saying, well, hey, you don't like what we're doing here, you're a bunch of racists, you can't accept African Americans' position of leadership, look at you folks, white males over 50, old 60s liberals, etc., we are who we are, and you can't take it, and you can't deal with it. Sharon Harper, this has had particularly bad invocations lately at WBAI with the appointment by Bessie Wash of Utrice Lee an African-American woman who'd had a radio program there for many years, to replace Valerie Van Isler, previous station manager, who was also African-American, who'd been there for a long time, over 10 years. And I believe of all the people fired and banned, most, if not almost all of them, have been African-Americans. Is that true?
All of the fired are African-American.
Right. And the band?
Most of the band as well.
Most of the band, yeah.
Most of the band.
What's going on?
Well, that is a difficult question. I would say this. No one would doubt the fact that Clarence Thomas is African-American. He's an example of someone who clearly has all the, you know, the physical appearances of being African-American, but the work he's done certainly has not been to the benefit of people of African descent. And when he was challenged on his behavior, he accused folks of presenting a high-tech lynching of him. So, I mean, we have in that person an example of an African-American person who does not serve the interests of African-American people. If we look at radio station WBAI right now, we look at people who are African-American, who have a background and a history in the community. You're in a situation where most African-Americans know what racism is, and they're hearing from people that they trust that they're the victims of racism. But we have to look at what they're doing and ask ourselves, are they serving the needs of the African-American community by the actions? And also, we have to ask ourselves if behavior that is negative and contrary to the interests of the African community, when performed by African people, you know, do we let this happen without criticism? And criticism of bad behavior or negative behavior or detrimental behavior, is that racism if someone who is black is performing it? So these things all come into question. I think what's happening is that the sympathies and the understandings of people in this area who know racism very well are being manipulated.
And wouldn't I, this is Sherry Gendelman, Sharon, and I would also add that a class analysis or the fact that a corporate agenda will affect all of us, no matter what the categories that we reside in, and that people obfuscate the real issue here by raising the issue of racism or sexism when the issue is corporatism or a political agenda that is based on class. Because clearly the people that are in control here now wish to push a corporate agenda and profit if they can for their class as opposed to any individual category that we may reside in.
Jerry Horn is the author, among other books, of The Fire This Time, The Watts Uprising in the 1960s. He also has been doing research on black labor at sea, and in a couple of few weeks' time, I hope he's going to be back with us on this program, if I still do have a program, talking about his latest book, which is A Class Struggle in Hollywood from 1930 to 1950, a fascinating topic, which we're going to, I hope, really get into then. But Jerry Horn, what's your take on what Sharon Harper just said?
Well, first of all, I'm very concerned about the possible due process violations at WBAI. I think, as a former labor lawyer, in fact, always concerned when I hear about working people being terminated without due process, without notice and a hearing. That concerns me deeply. I'm concerned also, obviously, about changing locks and having employees locked out of the workplace. I'm even more concerned, perhaps, about all these rumblings about selling of stations. I hope that's not true, and perhaps one of you have more intelligence on that than I do.
Well, read the bylaws changes, and you'll see what we're talking about, the proposed bylaws changes.
Well, that's very troubling, because that would be quite harmful to the interests of the entire progressive movement. But as a former programmer, let me ask a question. One of the things that I've thought about in considering this WBAI situation is whether or not it's suggestive and indicative of a larger rift between liberals and the left. You saw this perhaps in the 2000 presidential election, even in the black community, where you had Cornel West, Danny Glover, Randall Robinson of TransAfrica, Mel King, the black guy who should have been mayor of Boston if there had not been such intense racism in that city. all supporting Ralph Nader, and then you had many leaders in Congressional Black Caucus, of course, supporting Al Gore. And since then, just as there have been recriminations between Gore and Nader supporters, generally, certainly that's happened in the black community as well. And I'm wondering if this situation in Pacifica is reflective, Larry Bensky, of some wider rift between liberals and the left, because after all, there have been conflicts between liberals and the left for some years. You know that many liberals, in fact, went along with McCarthyism.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jerry, but the point is that we were talking about this last hour. I wish this program was still on WPFW in Washington, but it isn't anymore. They took it off nationally when they fired me the first time back in 1998. But we were discussing last hour this a little bit, that Mary Frances Berry belongs to the traditional electoral liberal African-American left that you're talking about. And that one of the basic mistakes that was made here was in allowing a government official with such a heavy stake in electoral politics and in keeping her electoral position, she's a presidential appointee, to become chair of the board of a network which was founded and dedicated to anti-government dissent. That had to be setting off alarm bells in many people's heads, and I must admit, I was one of the people who didn't have the alarm bells set off in my heads about that.
But that, in a sense, reinforces my point, that the people I've mentioned who were supporting Nader, West, Danny Glover, et cetera, they're not government appointees, they're not elected officials.
Right.
Whereas many of the leaders who were supporting Gore with the Congressional Black Caucus, they're, of course, elected officials. Many of them are leading members of the Democratic National Committee. So I think what you're saying, in a sense, reinforces this point, which makes it a bit more difficult to deal with because, of course, to confront the right wing, obviously there needs to be a modicum of unity between liberals and the left, but that may be difficult to maintain, which means that this issue in Pacifica is even larger and therefore more problematic than many of us might have first imagined.
I think that's a good point. But, Sharon Harper, I noticed that the pressure on Democracy Now and the effective purging of the Pacifica Network News of people like Dan Coughlin and Verna Avery Brown, who, by the way, Verna Avery Brown is going to be with us in our next segment here, started, coincidentally, not coincidentally, at the run-up to the year 2000 presidential election, when programs like Democracy Now! And the Pacifica Network News were giving a lot of coverage to alternatives to the Democratic Party and to Ralph Nader in particular. And what's your take on that?
Well, I think that, you know, we can't ignore Professor Horn's premise about this being a part of a broader rift, a broader movement in this country, and a split, if you would, between the liberals and the left. I think one of the reasons we see this is because there are forces, liberal forces, that no longer appreciate the type of coverage that we give in these news programs.
Well, they never liked it. I mean, liberals never liked what Pacifica was doing, when Pacifica was doing its job. Liberals were always saying, Jerry Horn, back into the 50s and 60s, oh my goodness, don't let those communists on the air. What are you doing? Free speech has to stop when the nation's interests are at stake and yada-da-yada, all of that stuff.
But they were never on our board, were they?
That was the problem. That's the problem we got into. They were never, but they were on our board. We had stupid Matthew Lazar isn't with us. It's all described in his book, The History of an Alternative Network, Pacifica Radio. There was a time when people got into trouble and had to leave the national board because they were tainted with the then fatal brush of communism. This comes directly into the kind of research you've been doing lately, Jerry, for that book I hope to talk to you about in a few weeks' time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you mentioned in your introduction, I've been spending a lot of time in Southern California lately, and as a result, I've been stuck on freeways and tuning into KPFK, the Pacifica station in Los Angeles. And let me first of all say that some of my best friends work with KPFK. I have nothing hostile to say about that station. But having said that, having worked with WBAI and listened to WBAI quite a bit as well, I see some very clear distinctions between these two stations. WBAI tended to interview more activists than KPFK has in terms of my listening of the station over the past few weeks. KPFK, I do think, does a fairly good job of interviewing intellectuals and artists and musicians and things of that sort, but I think they fall down on the job with regard to interviewing activists, and I'm really not sure why. I hope it's not reflective of the kind of conflict we've been talking about.
No, I think it's directly reflective of it. I think what you have at KPFK in Los Angeles is a small clique of excuse the expression, white male liberals associated with the Nation magazine, who basically are using that as a expanded voice for Radio Nation. I can't tell you how many emails I get all the time from Los Angeles area listeners saying, why don't they have more call-in shows? Why don't they have people of color except at nights on weekends? Why don't they have weathers? Why do I hear so many of the Nation magazine's voices on the air? I think that's exactly what's gone on there. It is not a Pacifica station anymore in the freewheeling sense of the kind of discussion you hear on WBAI or KPFA. It is something else entirely. But that's the problem that's going to have to be addressed somewhere down the line if we ever get back rational control for free speech community radio again. What I'm concerned about in New York, Sharon Harper, and maybe you can speak to this, is that the divisiveness, which is, must be very confusing to listeners to hear that all the people fired have been African-American and most of the people banned have been African-American, and then African-Americans are very active in the protests against WBAI, and that you have an African-American station manager who's been appointed by Utrecht Lead, a morning show host who's African-American, who seems to be quite a thuggish character, I must say, from the way I've been reading some transcripts of how he treats Amy Goodman on the air, but he's African-American. It must be very confusing to the listeners in New York. It cannot help but have a serious impact on the ability of WBAI to raise funds, especially when Juan Gonzalez, the co-host, resigns on the air and says he's going to dedicate himself to seeing that Pacifica stations don't raise funds anymore. What's your take on what's going to be going on there in the next few months?
That is difficult to predict. I do know that there is a lot of confusion because of the nature and the perception that people have of the talk show host, Mr. Riley, and of Ms. Lead. Ms. Lead has been a well-known journalist in New York City for a long time and has connected her name with some activist causes. And people see her in a particular light. And black people, having had the experience of racism, knowing that it does exist, will believe in large part what they're told if they don't have any other history. On the other hand, there are many other African Americans who will see this for what it is, will see the actions that have taken place and interpret them and understand that these people, you know, don't mean any good to the African American or any other community right now. The African American community is, in that regard, like other communities. Some people will believe one thing and others will believe others. And how you convince people that that this is not what it appears and that these people are not well-meaning, do not hold the interests of the community or the broader community at heart, I don't have the answer to. I think time will tell as programming changes, as people in the community understand that their interests are no longer addressed. Just by removing the staff of the wake-up call, she has managed to alter 12 hours of programming that, you know, was dedicated to the interests of the community at large, the African-American community, as well as the rest of the communities of the city, by, you know, the reportage of local, regional, national, international events. So I think that it will take some time. Some people will see it and some people won't.
By the way, something that Professor Horn mentioned earlier about firing people without due process. So you were shop steward, were you not?
Oh, yes, I was shop steward. I still have not received any notification as to the cause of my firing. We filed a grievance, and in the step two answer, we got a vague reply that I was terminated because of conduct and actions in regard to the production of Wake Up Call, and that after a careful review of the circumstances and conduct in question, Ms. Lead had concluded that my termination was both warranted and appropriate. I still don't know what the actions or the conduct was.
Well, sounds like another lawsuit waiting to happen, unfortunately. And Sherry Gendelman, chair of the local advisory board here. We've seen Pacifica do this before in the case of Nicole Sawaya, who's also sitting here with us. In my case, in other cases, they basically go right in your face, do things that they know are going to cause them to get sued, and yet they do them anyway. And here's another one.
Yeah, that's quite accurate, and they obviously don't care because the stakes for them are, as we have been saying all along, the potential sale of the stations. Some people on the board now, the new bylaws have a And actually, you don't need the bylaws for people to take a commission off of the sale of the stations.
Right.
I hope that Sharon, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name, I'm sure that you will get a lawyer and pursue this to the ultimate vindication of yourself and Bernard and everyone in New York who was treated so abysmally. I think that probably the thing that both you and Bernard were doing that was offensive to them was that you were performing your jobs with professionalism and integrity, and that integrity was dedicated to protecting the mission of Pacifica.
Speaking of the mission of Pacifica, I want to thank Jerry Horn. Jerry, don't do anything till we get back on the air with you in a few weeks, okay? And I'll try to keep my fingernails hanging to the cliff here so that I'm still here. I want to talk to Jerry Horn about his new book. It would be very interesting, about class struggle in Hollywood, 1930-1950. Professor Gerald Horn of the University of North Carolina and UC Santa Barbara. And Sharon Harper, I know you're going off to a community meeting in New Jersey. There are thousands of people in the New York area who are upset and mobilizing about this, as there have been in New York. And I want to hope you personally will take our best wishes from the staff here at KPFA and the local advisory board and our support to that meeting. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Sharon Harper and Jerry Horn. We'll be right back with more and listener phone-ins. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Verna Avery Brown, former anchor of the Pacifica Network News, as well as Laura Flanders. Stay tuned to Sunday Salon. Here on Sunday Salon with our two-hour teach-in on the current crisis at Pacifica. In case you've tuned in late, you can get all the information and background going back to two and a half years ago at www.savepacifica.net, including the new proposed bylaws, the full text of them, or comments on them, and do what you will. But if you want to continue hearing this program or anything else on this station, you know, people say this all the time in fundraising. And over the years, I think I probably raised more money on these airwaves than anybody else, partially because I've been here so long. But I always debunked when people would say, you know, call up right now and pledge money or we'll go off the air. That's never been true. And it still isn't true. It's not about the money. But unless we are able to somehow get back control of this organization from the present board of directors, it is true that we will not be on the air. And it won't be because we don't raise enough money, because you people have been extremely generous, including in this current fund drive. But it'll be because we'll get sold, or we'll have stream programming enforced, and other gag rules put down, and community broadcasting completely destroyed. You have to act now, folks. I know I'm sounding alarmist and off the hook, but I am. If you don't contact legislators, if you do not make your comments to the board members who are soliciting them, as you can see on the website, www.savepacifica.net, I have no confidence that we're going to be able to continue in any way, shape, or form with this or any other program on KPFA. One announcement while we're waiting to get our guests. While we're waiting for our guests in our next segment, let me mention that this Wednesday at 7:30 at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, there's a forum on one of the things I wish I was talking about this morning, and perhaps we'll talk about in 2 weeks when I'm back, if I'm back. That is the media coverage of the Middle East. Barbara Lubin, who's been such a staunch advocate of KPFA and the struggle of the Middle East Children's Alliance, We'll be joining Alexander Coburn of The Nation, Michael Jacobs of the Israel Center, Nadine Naber of the Arabs Women's Solidarity Association, and John Rothman of KGO Radio. Should be quite a brawl. Once again, that's at the Commonwealth Club, Wednesday, February 7th. It costs money. It's a Media Alliance production, $15 for general admission, $12 for Media Alliance members. If you want advance tickets, and it may well sell out, you should call 415-597-6705. That's 415-597-6705 about the Wednesday forum on media coverage of the Middle East. Joining us now from her roost in New York is Laura Flanders, a colleague for many years in Pacifica National Programming. She was for how many years a co-host of Counterspin?
10 years.
Chuckle, chuckle. Counterspin, the media analysis program by FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, which is broadcast here on KPFA and has been ever since its inception. I think all the rest of the Pacifica stations, does WBAI still run it, Laura?
Well, it did as of last week, for sure.
Right. The other Pacifica stations in Washington, Houston, and Los Angeles dropped it after it dared to examine the Pacifica question as a media issue. And I understand that there was a substitute program on WPFW, which they also now drop because it dared to... I mean, the idea of censorship in Pacifica, which was founded exactly to defeat censorship, is just mind-boggling. That there's nothing this present board of directors will not go to. Anyway, Laura Flanders, 10 years at Counterspin, also worked, you heard her as a substitute host sometimes for Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! On the Pacifica Network News. We co-anchored the Gates confirmation hearings back in 1991 for head of the CIA. Laura Flanders is now host of the Laura Flanders Show on RadioForChange.com, Monday through Friday, RadioForChange.com, which broadcast this program until last week for 6 months. It's a web service, web radio, trying to do what networks like Pacifica no longer see fit to do on the national level, although we hope to change that. So anyway, welcome, Laura Flanders, to KPFA.
Well, thanks for having me, Larry. Great to be here.
And also joining us from Washington, D.C. is Verna Avery Brown, who was my colleague for many, many years at Pacifica. Started at Pacifica back in the late 1980s, Verna?
Yes, Larry, exactly. 1988.
And
good morning, Larry. Good morning, Laura.
Hey, Verna.
Good morning, gals, and welcome back. It's wonderful to be with you again. I wish we were doing something other than discussing Pacifica on Sunday morning, as we did for so many years. Verna Avery Brown, the familiar voice, anchor of the Pacifica Network News for 10 years.
Actually, it was 12 last.
Thank you. But who's counting? Many interviews with people, a very concerned and dedicated worker. I had the privilege when I was in Washington of working alongside her. Almost literally, our desks were close together, and I know what passion and what humanity she brought to the work she did then and will bring, I hope, someday again to the Pacifica airwaves. The reason I wanted both of you to be here this morning, we've been talking for the last hour and a half about the bylaws changes and their effect, the situation at WBAI and the manipulation of the race issue there. The reason I wanted to have the two of you with me is to bring back again, beyond all these legalisms and structural questions, the content issue as to what it is that we did at our best and what I hope we can put this organization back together and do again. And national programming was very much a part of that. Verna, you've spoken eloquently since you were forced out of Pacifica Network News about a year ago about how you felt about working at Pacifica and it versus other organizations. And now I know to earn a living, which you and all of us must do, you're back in commercial broadcasting again. Has this brought to your mind ever any thoughts about the difference in the value of Pacifica?
Oh, it certainly does, Larry. I mean, there's not a day that I don't go into work and there's a part of me that is disappointed and dismayed at what is going on at Pacifica now, particularly given all the energy that I put into my work at Pacifica for over a decade. When I started at Pacifica, it's interesting, I can look at my sons, my twin boys, who just turned 13 on Friday, and recall that when I started at Pacifica, it was 6 months after their birth.
I remember that. It was the little babies. They were so
That's
cute.
That's right. And they just had a big pajama party, and their friends were here, and the place looked like the UN was in session. Lots of their friends, El Salvadorian, Haitian Americans, African Americans, Caucasian Americans, and it's just wonderful. But it also sort of reminds me, they're Pacifica babies, really, and the fact that these are their friends really is a good, strong statement about what it is that Pacifica is trying to accomplish and how that mission is under attack now. And so when you say, do I ever think about, what happened at Pacifica, I'll just reiterate it. Not a day goes by when I don't think about that. And in fact, even though I am in commercial radio at this time, I have started my own corporation. It's called Avant Garde. It's a nonprofit corporation, and it's solely to produce a show that will be returning to the public airwaves, hopefully within a year.
Well, good, good. There's some people in our control room who are applauding right now. You can't hear them. And I know people are applauding out there in the KPFA listening audience as well. Laura Flanders, you were intimately involved in the, as I said before, Pacifica Network News, Democracy Now!, around WBAI, etc. What's your take on where we're at in the present struggle? I opened up an hour and a half ago by saying that I don't ever remember, certainly in my 32 years, off and on association with this organization, and in my understanding of the 51 years, I don't remember a time when we were in a greater crisis than this. Do you agree?
Well, Larry, you know, I want to go back to one thing that you said at the beginning about maybe it sounds, you know, histrionic to say we'll be off the air if people don't give money, or if people don't act, or if people don't do something, or if people don't give money, whatever it is. There are lots of ways that people can end up off Pacifica's air. And it's a pleasure to be back on Pacifica with Vanna, with whom I worked at Pacifica Network News. And I have to just say, you know, we are not on Pacifica's airwaves anymore. And that is something that I, speaking for myself, regret. I think Vanna just said she regrets it. And
yes.
I dare say there's a listener or two out there that might regret it, too. You know, I'm very happy where I'm working. But just as Vanna said, you know, there isn't a day that goes by where I don't think, I had a vision of Pacifica. I had the mission of Pacifica in my daily commitment to the work that I do. I thought for many years, and it was Dennis Bernstein at Undercurrents, then Contragate, that first brought me on to do radio, I thought that was my home and would be my home for a long time. And it became impossible to continue working with the network for myself and also for Vanna. And I think that when we talk about, you know, we could be off the air if people don't do this or that, you have to realize the people that have been lost to this network, the hope that has been dashed in the hearts of people that wanted to contribute their skills and their vision and their hard work and their creativity on a daily basis to this network. Without personalizing it just to the two of us, there are people all over this country.
Make it three of us.
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, there are people all over this country who embrace that vision of Pacifica, and what we've witnessed is the organization move away from that vision and create a climate in which it becomes impossible for a Vanna or myself or Dan Coughlin or yourself, Larry, Juan Gonzalez most recently, to thrive. And that is a crying shame.
Because it should be exactly...
I've said it before, I'll say it again, yeah. It's a crying shame, and we must not cry, we must organize. Because it should be exactly the opposite, which I suspect is what you were just about to say.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
I would just add also that the fact that Pacifica was virtually the only outlet for the voices that we all struggled and fought to bring to the airwaves, and now with the ongoing demise of Pacifica, any other outlets that might have existed, they all seem to be evaporating right before our eyes. And so we have to really step up the fight to try to create, first of all, salvage what we can of Pacifica and to create other outlets for it. Laura, you're still in the media, and Larry, you've got your show. And And I am working to bring something about as well. So I think the fight has to be fought on more than one front.
Yeah.
So that we don't find ourselves in this position again where the only outlet is under attack and
right.
we have no other alternative.
Certainly creating more is better, but Pacifica should be in the center of that creation of more.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've spent much of the year working with the independent media centers across the country, bringing people alternative coverage on television, on free speech TV, of the conventions, courtesy of the independent media centers. And, you know, well, that was exactly where I wanted to be. And it used to be exactly where Pacifica wanted to be. And instead, Pacifica national programmers, except for Amy Goodman, were barred from the door. People from PNM were not allowed into the independent media centers, which is not just that they're not at the center, they are seen as the enemy, and that is, I mean, we have lost a lot of ground in not being, Pacifica has lost a lot of ground not being at the heart of this movement of expanding the independent media movement, because it is happening out there. Radio for Change is part of it on the commercial level, and it'll happen whether Pacifica is there or not. But Pacifica should be there and has the most to bring to it.
Well, I refuse to think that this battle is over. I got up on a sound truck outside this station the day Nicole Sawaya was fired, and I've since spoken dozens, if not hundreds of times on and off the air about this. You know, they're going to have to pry it away from my stiff, cold fingers before I give up. And we are...
Then we'll prop you up.
Prop me up. Did you see that news story about the guy who went into work... as a proofreader, was this in New York? Did you see this, Laura? You read everything. Some people...
He had stiff, cold fingers?
He was sitting at his desk for a week, dead, propped up, and nobody noticed because he was the kind of guy that came to work early in the morning and left late at night.
Yeah, that was really expanding all over the place. Beyond... I want to know if he got paid for those last hours.
Sometimes I want to save the most absurd items in the news every week and read them all back to back.
That's what Thurgood Marshall wanted us to do, prop him up.
Oh, I wish we had. We wouldn't have Clarence Thomas today. We don't have to prop up our listeners. They're on the phones already, ringing the phones off the hook. 510-848-4425 is our telephone number, 510-848-4425. As we are discussing with Verna Avery Brown and Laura Flanders, the Pacifica situation, sounding, I hope, not too maudlin and nostalgic, but you know, when I think about it, Verna, the great years that I spent as national affairs correspondent in Washington, we seem to have lost Verna Avery Brown.
I thought you were just sounding very maudlin.
I was sounding very confused as I was listening to my engineer and you at the same time. Trying to take phone-ins. Let's see who the first caller is. I don't know. I'm really off the hook today, as they say. Beside myself, I need a week off, possibly more. I'm certainly going to get next week off. I won't be here, but I hope to be back following week and a little bit more together about this. But you know what I was thinking, Laura, is that those years that were so difficult in Washington doing the national affairs broadcasts we were doing, at the time, it seemed very frustrating. We didn't have resources. We didn't have personnel. We certainly didn't have money. The amount of times I had to think, will I take a $4 taxi drive ride back, or will I take, you know, an 80-cent metro ride? And I'd say, well, if I save those $3, maybe I'll have money for lunch. I mean, that's the level we were operating on in Pacifica as broadcasters. And at the same time, this board of directors comes in with their American Express cards, their fancy hotel meeting places, their luxury every this and that, and, you know, takes the money away from this organization that people like us helped to build with our own sweat and blood and tears over the years. It has me incensed. And I don't want them to get away with it.
No, and I don't think they are going to get away with it. I mean, I am, anybody who listens to my show knows that I am fond of optimism. The worse the situation gets, the cheerier I become, because I think that's our job, to keep spirits up. And I think that the resignation on the air by Juan Gonzalez last Wednesday was just a shot in the arm that the movement to reclaim Pacifica needed. When someone stands up like the Congressional Black Caucus did on January 6th there at the joint session, standing up against something they saw was wrong, that's an inspiring thing. And I think people are inspired all over the country by what Juan did this week and the comments that he made. I mean, nobody who hasn't recently listened to WBAI or been there in the station has any idea what he's talking about. You know, we use language like, you know, the clique. He talked about the small clique that has taken over the board. He talked about the climate of hostility. Well, it's a climate where, you know, I literally fear for Amy's well-being continually there at that station.
And well, we have somebody on the phone right now, Laura, who can talk a little bit more about that. That's Eileen Sutton, one of the banned people from WBAI.
Yeah, we're not talking details when we talk about how an environment and a clique and a climate can steal a station, because that's what's happening.
Eileen, welcome to KPFA. I don't know if you've been listening on the web the last hour and a half or so, but
yes, I have, Larry. Thank you. It's been a wonderful program.
Well, it's been a very frustrating program because it brings up once again that we need to rededicate ourselves so much this next week, especially, to trying to derail these bylaws. And even if we do derail the bylaws, we've got a longer struggle ahead. But Eileen Sutton, you were one of the reporters who went on strike against Pacifica Network News when they censored off the air mention of our struggle, which resulted in Verna Avery Brown's departure, Dan Coughlin's departure, and et cetera. What's going on there now? We had Sharon Harper on before, as you know. She said she was going out to a meeting in New Jersey where there are going to be hundreds of people. I know you have support groups growing up all over the New York metropolitan area.
Yeah, that's true, actually. There's now Connecticut, New Jersey, Long Island, Rockland County, the Concerned Friends of WBAI listener group here in New York is morphing rather quickly, and that's been a pretty exciting development. I think that, you know, as I've said on your program earlier in the struggle, listeners were hit with a crisis within the context of not having been up to speed and not really having been that educated about the crisis really throughout the network. So folks are coming up to speed very quickly, and thanks to your programming and others. Unfortunately, with the gag rule here, it's very difficult to get information out. We're relying on, I've urged listeners through the hotline and through the various posts to the listserv that I moderate to continue to call into programs and give out the hotline number so folks can stay connected to each other. And certain producers are allowing that information to go out over the air as producers literally a day at a time negotiate the gag rule. I wanted to make one comment and ask you a question, actually, in terms of strategy. In listening to the discussion of the elections in Berkeley of the local advisory board, as you may know, there is a push here and perhaps in the other listening areas to have elections for the LAB. And I just want to say that I think it's important to put into the analysis of how to go about doing that in any kind of strategic discussion that the elections in Berkeley, and this is for the benefit of anyone listening and streaming from the New York area, the elections in Berkeley took place within the context of you folks, number one, having a control of the airwaves, and number two, having a fairly educated listenership about many of the issues. And I think for those folks who are here pushing for elections very quickly within the context of us not having control of our airwaves and people just struggling to figure out what has hit this station, I think it's important for folks when they bang the drum of democracy and elections, which are really buzzwords in a lot of usages, it's important to contextualize what happened in Berkeley around the LAB.
Well, I think, Eileen, what you have to realize is the elections here took place as a result of a rather lengthy process, and that the first organization that was formed with participatory backing, not exactly elected, but certainly appointed from various constituencies, was this 12-person steering committee, which represented listener groups, it represented paid staff, it represented unpaid staff, and the local advisory board as constituted at the time. And that degree of representativity, if you will, grassroots up from those constituencies, allowed that 12-person organization to do the work that it did, which enabled later on, in a very rough and difficult process, local elections to take place. That 12-person steering committee was engaged in what turned out to be a farce, a mediation that was never went anywhere because Pacifica didn't want it to go anywhere. But I would suggest that one thing you might consider back east is forming a coordinating committee or a steering committee or whatever you want to call it from various constituencies like listeners, staff, local advisory board, etc. And that group then moving towards elections. And I know the people who did the elections here will be happy to advise you in any way they can as to how they did it here and maybe some pitfalls that you might avoid along the way.
Well, thank you. That's,
all right.
That's very helpful. Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
In terms of legislative support, do you think that given Pacifica is a California corporation, that it's useful for us here in New York, for example, to reach out to state legislators? And if so, what do you think they could do?
Well, I don't know about state legislators. I certainly think it would be useful for you to reach out to your congressional delegation from the New York and Connecticut and New Jersey area, because they are people who can make the kind of noises that maybe even a John Murdoch listens to, although I don't know what a person like John Murdoch listens to. I don't know the... my engineer points out he's listening, probably listening now or hear a tape of this. I don't know what effect the New York legislators would have. I do know that one wrinkle on this is that the Pacifica board, if these new bylaws are passed, as we were mentioning earlier, could basically change their articles of incorporation. They could, I suppose, incorporate themselves in some place like New York or Washington, D.C. They might feel as friendlier and then do what they want to do. I think this is right now, because of the legal element, a California fight. The Attorney General has come in on our side, but I think state legislators, as I was saying earlier, in the state Senate or the Assembly or members of Congress from this area, have got to be called by our listeners in the next couple of days and told, look at these bylaws, go to www.savepacifica.net and save this network. We elected you to do the people's business. This is a public corporation. It is being hijacked, in the words of Juan Gonzalez, and we got to stop it. Thanks, Eileen, for calling. We've got a lot of other callers waiting. As always, Scott in Berkeley. Thanks for joining us on Sunday Salon. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Larry. Hey, I have a comment and then a question. Do you think we could all agree that this is a very scary situation?
Yes.
A very painful situation?
Yes.
And also... the left has a long history of self-destructive infighting.
Yes.
Then my question is, can we, one of the fronts of the campaign, can we, through this painful situation, can we still keep ourselves open to the possibility that there are a number of board members who aren't on our quote-unquote side, who may be acting, as Gandhi used to say, in their what they believe to be the acting for the highest good, that may be swayed to see where we're coming from?
Well, you know, Scott, no, I don't think so, because I'll tell you why. Because that effort to sway them has been going on for the last 18 months, in some cases since they were appointed. And they have indicated in every way, shape, and form that they are not interested in anything but pushing what was then the Mary Frances Berry and is now the John Murdoch agenda. We now see what that agenda really is. You have to be extraordinarily naive to read these proposed bylaws and think that anything but the centralizing of power, the changing of the mission, and the eventual profiteering by insiders is anything but what's contained there. That's who's on this board right now, my friend. I wish it were otherwise. They could have stood up a long time ago. They've been contacted front channel, back channel, on every channel. And I must say that
they've been attacked.
Over the last year and a half.
Relentlessly.
Well, of course they've been attacked relentlessly. Look how they behave. What should they be doing? Praise for their behavior?
They're going to close down, Larry. How are you going to keep a dialogue open?
You're not going to keep a dialogue open with people who are so much your enemy. You're going to have to remove them. You are talking about a situation of ultimate conflict right here, my brother. I wish we were in a Gandhian situation where we could all sit down in a room and sing Kumbaya and come out of it together.
But
you go to that Houston board meeting,
sir,
and see what you see, as we have sent dozens of people from this signal area to their board meetings in Washington, D.C., in Houston, most of them saying, isn't there any way we can talk to these people? We're all human beings together. We have something in common, some of us. And they've come back and said, you won't believe how they behave. Ken Ford, standing there when a listener hands him a list of demands made by the local advisory board and the steering committee out here, ripping it up and throwing it at that listener's feet. Mary Frances Berry cutting off discussion and debate, walking out of the room, everybody on that faction voting lockstep with her. That mart is over. We are now in a conflict. They got to go.
But that's...
Our next caller is Bill in Fresno. Hi, Bill.
Hello?
Hi, Bill.
Larry, I was watching several hours of C-SPAN yesterday, and Mary Frances Berry was on a panel on the future of black society in America. And I got a chance to see the two faces of Mary Frances Berry, a very disturbing. She is so eloquently able to speak about her ideas about what to do to improve black society in America. But the one thing she said that I wanted to pass on is that when you write your congressman or senator, be sure, or email, be sure to write. Emails you can't see, letters fill your office, and you have to look at them. And I'm wondering if that's why she never answered my email.
I don't think that's that reason. Thanks for that contribution, Bill. Anna in San Francisco is our next caller. Hi, Anna.
Yes, hello. I have three quick questions. I've often wondered, as you're soliciting new members, EFT seems like a good way to go because I know people here in the city are afraid to give more money that feel like they've been really ripped off if the station does go down. If you ask for EFTs, then you can say, I don't know if this is a good idea or not. You could say, look, if they do take the station, then you can just cancel your EFT. That way you won't lose money.
Okay, what's the next point?
What if, once you've got people who want to give you money, you could ask them to give you $5 or $10 towards a legal defense separate account?
Well, anybody who's interested in contributing to the Legal Defense Fund should look at www.savepacifica.net.
Not everybody has computers or time to...
Everybody is going to have time. Excuse me, I really am tired of that excuse that people don't have time, and will I give out the phone number of every legislator, and what's Dianne Feinstein's phone number? You know what? I don't have it. If you believe in this cause, take 10 seconds and make one phone call and ask for Dianne Feinstein's phone number. If you don't have a computer, find a friend who does. Go to a library. We can't walk you and hold your hand through this any further. It's too late, folks. You're going to have to act. You know, it's just, I'm really off the hook about this. I know, but I am. What was the third thing, Anna?
Is it legal in any situation for any board to change the bylaws to make it something for their own profit?
That is one of the issues. That's a very good question. That's one of the issues that our lawyers, and there are many of them, are going to have to be taking up as soon as they figure out how to get this into court. This is a long legal struggle. It's not going to be over even should they change the bylaws. We're going to fight on. And once again, if you want to find out where those lawsuits are, the status of them, on savepacifica.net, right on the right-hand side, there's an excellent summary of the lawsuits and the status and what you can do to contribute, either tax-deductible or non-tax-deductible, to supporting that legal effort, which is now at crunch time. Tim in Oakland? Is that where you are, Tim?
Yeah, Oakland.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the website. This is the most in-depth coverage I've personally heard of this, and I am interested, but after listening for 2 hours, I still am not clear, and maybe what you just said about the lawsuit is part of the answer. If these people don't give a damn and they can make lots of money, are you just begging them or trying to pressure and embarrass them, or is there some real way, maybe that lawsuit you just mentioned, that you can stop them? After listening 2 hours, I don't get it, and I will go to the website, but...
No, we're not begging them. I mean, the time when we tried to dialogue with them in every conceivable way, individually, on the air, off the air, back channel, front channel, mediation, you name it, we tried it, they didn't respond. Now what we have to do is remove this board of directors and install one, in my opinion, that's democratically elected or selected somehow from the local areas. Mm. And the lawsuits are part of that, so please do look at them. Laura Flanders?
The lawsuits and also the campaign that Juan Gonzalez has begun, the Pacifica campaign that people can join up by writing to PacificaCampaign@Yahoo.com, PacificaCampaign@Yahoo.com. There is in this movement opportunities for every kind of struggle, and people can participate in all sorts of different ways. And as someone who's no longer employed by Pacifica, I feel reticent to advocate any particular action that would affect the employment of people who are still Pacifica employees. But I do have to say I have a lot of sympathy for Juan and his colleagues at this point who say the only way we are going to get to these people is to cut off the flow of cash to their institution. And I'm hoping that we will be able to discuss that strategy of not, in fact, contributing to the stations, because it does answer the clear question raised by your last caller, which is, what do we do? How do we set a clear goal? And the clear goal that Juan is saying, echoed by yourself just then, was get rid of this board, and then all those who've been planning what should come in its place move into action. But this board has to be removed. It has to be not worth its while. The members on that board, Each one of them has to go the route of Mary Frances Berry. This is no longer worth my while. And I watched that same Black Forum on BET last night. It was on C-SPAN, convened by Tavis Smiley. And I was so sad there wasn't one person in the audience who got up with just a silent, I mean, you don't have to harass people or threaten anyone, but a silent vigil with someone with a sign saying, shame on you, for about Pacifica, would have embarrassed her in that moment. And that's what I have a lot of sympathy for, the people that say that's the way to go. We need to give silent haunting to every one of these board members, everywhere they go, that they will not get away with this. This is listener-supported radio, which just means listeners everywhere will support the agenda to remove this board, reclaim this network, and then let us move forward.
Laura Flanders, thank you very much for joining us. Those who want to hear Laura's impassioned voice on a daily basis can tune in to her on radioforchange.com. She's on 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. our time. Is it 9 a.m. to noon our time, I think?
It's 8 a.m.
8 to 11.
11, yes.
Thank you.
Time.
I knew it was sometime or other.
Change.com.
All right. Thank you very much, Laura, for joining us once again. Laura Flanders from New York. And thank you, all of you out there in KPFA land. I want to just close by saying that same thing as when I began. This is the time to act. This is the time to do something. This is the time to log on to SavePacifica.net on your own, a library, or a friend's computer. It's a time to read the bylaws or a digest of them. It's a time to forward your comments to our six valiant board members who are trying to stop this hijacking, as Juan Gonzalez calls it, of the network. It's a time for you to be calling your state assembly member and representative, whether you live in Berkeley, Oakland, Sonoma, San Jose, Fresno, or wherever, and saying, this is a California chartered corporation. They are trying to change it, shut it down, and profit from it. This is a time to be as vigilant as you can, and this is a time when we need your support as we never have before. www.savepacifica.net. www.savepacifica.net. And if I have sounded overwrought and distraught today, it is because I am. This has been a personally insulting, outrageous, and humiliating series of events that has happened to me at the hands of Pacifica, including now as I try to pursue justice in the lawsuit and find that they are funding their lawyers against me through KPFA listener donations. Not telling you that, of course, not asking you that, just doing it. All of this is beyond reason. This board of directors has got to be removed, and they've got to be stopped, and it's not going to happen unless you help us. www.savepacifica.net. I'm Larry Densky. This is Sunday Salon. Thanks today to Andrea Duflon, our engineer, and stay tuned to Sugar Mama, tribute to the local blues artist Gwen Avery here on KPFA, listener-sponsored radio. I'll be back in 2 weeks.